and good morning to everyone. I would like to note that today we have with us Judge Jay Durr from District Court Judge Jay Durr from Omaha. On the far left as we're facing you, and Judge Erbaum from Southwest Nebraska, from Arapaho, is also with us on the court today. And with that information in mind, our first case of the day is State versus Antonio Ibarra Ratumaimuri, and I apologize to everyone for the likely mispronunciation of that last name. And this is a petition for further review. So, Mr. Meyer, good morning to you. You may approach.
Supreme Court. May it please the court, my name is Joe Meyer. I'm an assistant attorney general here on behalf of the appellant, State of Nebraska. The state asked this court to clarify the opinion of the Court of Appeals and affirm the judgment on different grounds. Precisely, the state asked this court to hold that appellee's appeal is an impermissible collateral attack because the challenge he made to the Court of Appeals could have been brought via a direct appeal of his initial conviction. Just a quick rundown of the facts. The appellee was pled no contest to third-degree assault in 2014. That charge was initially charged as third-degree sexual assault. The charge was amended to third-degree assault. The state announced at the plea that the parties intended it for it to be pled to as a registrable offense. The state asked the county court for a finding that the offense involved sexual conduct or sexual contact. The court made a finding that it was, quote, a sexual offense, and made another finding that the appellee would be subject to SORA. Appellee was sentenced to 180 days in jail, served that sentence, got out of jail, and in fact did register under SORA, registered with an address here in Lincoln, Nebraska. He also signed the notification of registration under Nebraska Sex Offender Registration Act form. Essentially how we got here is a police officer in Lincoln found the appellee sleeping in a downtown parking garage, was going to issue a citation for trespassing. Through that investigation, found out that he was a registered sex offender. The appellee admitted that he had become transient, and under the Registration Act, he had 3 business days after he became transient to update his registration, which he did not. He was charged with failing to register under SORA, filed a plea and abatement, and a motion to quash. Both were overruled, and stipulated bench trial was held, and he was found guilty and sentenced to 12 to 18 months in prison with credit for time served. The Court of Appeals found that this was not an impermissible collateral attack, citing to State versus Torres, and then moved on to the merits and found that he was subject to SORA.
On appeal, did he raise the motion to quash as an assignment of error?
Not that I know of.
What does that do to our standard of review?
Well, the assignment of error is in the sufficiency. I mean, I'm not sure. I defer to you on that. The registration violation has 2 elements. The state had to prove that he was subject to SORA and that he did not comply with SORA. So I think his argument is that the state didn't prove that he was subject to SORA.
What did the Court of Appeals say about the collateral attack?
They said that the SORA registration requirements are, in fact, collateral. They looked to Torres for that a defendant doesn't have to actually, the SORA requirements do not kick in until a conviction is had, my reading is that they said it was a collateral attack, but it's permissible. And in my petition for further review, I think Torres is distinguishable because Torres was an inherently sexual assault. The defendant in Torres was convicted of third-degree sexual assault. And then also, SORA itself has since been amended since Torres. Torres was decided in 1998, and then SORA was amended, I believe, in 2008. So when Torres was decided, the only offenses that were subject to registration were inherently sexual. So Norman, I believe, is more illustrative.
How have we handled appeals on issues of SOAR requirements in the past.
Can you...
What, have we had those on direct appeal in the past, or they've always been collateral, or how have we dealt with them?
Yes, Torres was a direct appeal, and he made an ex post facto argument, and this court held that he had no standing for that argument because he had not actually been subjected to SORA yet. Then Norman, the two cases that I found, Norman was a direct appeal, and that direct appeal took into account the actual factual finding at issue in this case, that it was a third degree assault conviction. The court made a finding that it was a sexual offense, and Norman took issue with that finding, and this court affirmed.
So has this court followed the Torres admonitions in the past, or have we entertained SORA appeals directly?
In Norman, yeah, it was a direct appeal, and this court entertained it. So I think Torres would be applicable to an inherently sexual offense. If the appellee here had been convicted of third-degree sexual assault, then Torres may apply. But he was convicted of third-degree assault, which
is
required...
Is that the result you would like from this, for this court to distinguish in that way?
Yeah, I think so, because Torres, I think, and you also have to look at the challenge that the appellant or the defendant is making. If the appellant is making a challenge to the registration requirements, be in length or an ex post facto or some challenge like that, then a standing analysis is appropriate. But here, the challenge is essentially to the factual findings. The factual findings that this was a sexual offense.
One of the comments in Norman was that in looking at the statute, sex offender is not defined in the statute. So therefore, you need to get a little bit behind that and find out what was the nature of the offense, don't you?
Exactly. And this is just plain and simple a challenge to a county court's factual findings. And appellate courts deal with those all the time on direct appeal. Defendant did not directly appeal his 2014 conviction, so the state believes he's stopped from trying to make that challenge here collaterally in this case.
Court of Appeals seem to be citing to the dissent in Torres. Is the dissent binding on anyone?
No. So, I guess without any further questions, just a make clear the state has no problem, does not take issue with the Court of Appeals analysis on the merits. The argument the state is making is simply that the Court of Appeals should have not have met the merits, and we ask this court to clarify that and hold that the challenge is an impermissible collateral attack.
And again, what specifically does the state want us to do? What is the rule you would like to come from this appeal?
That For a defendant convicted of a non-inherently sexual offense cannot challenge that factual finding in a later prosecution for a violation of SORA. But I believe a felon in possession of a handgun. If a felon is prosecuted for possessing a weapon, that person is not allowed to attack the felony the new offense is based upon. With that, I'll reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Sirayakoff, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor.
You may indeed, and you may proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Nathan Sirayakoff. I'm a deputy public defender here at the Lancaster County Public Defender's Office. I represent Antonio Redo-Maimuri. Your Honors, the court or the state has alleged that this is a collateral attack, that my client is making a collateral attack on the county court decision, when in fact it is nothing of the sort. And I think it's a confusion or a conflation of the issues to call it a collateral attack. I'd like to start by talking about the most obvious types of non-collateral attack in an enhancement-type proceeding. DUIs are the most common type of situation where the court has discussed collateral attacks. Also talked about that in the context State brought up with felonies and possession of felon or possession of a weapon by a felon. No, I cannot attack a prior DUI. But if a county court or a district court finds at a DUI hearing, at a DUI trial, makes a finding that, yeah, he probably did it, and then concludes the evidence, sentences him to a week in jail, and nobody appeals, that's not a valid prior. The court has to find, the court shall find, that he committed the DUI beyond a reasonable doubt. That's what the court is required to find in order for it to be a valid prior. And what we have here is the county court has said, I'm going to find that it was a sexual offense. He doesn't say, I'm going to find that it was an offense of sexual contact or sexual penetration beyond or at the standard of review, which my mind is blanking with the standard of review right now. It's clear and convincing evidence. He doesn't find by clear and convincing evidence that it was an offense of sexual contact or sexual penetration. There's no journal entry that the state can rely on in the present case saying it's a crime of sexual contact or sexual penetration. So just to clarify, when this case is filed and we set it for trial, the state has to prove certain things. The state has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that this is a crime, that my client has committed a crime that subjects him to the statute. The statute actually says, in order for the state to use that assault conviction, 29.4003 sub 1 BIB says the defendant shall, or the court shall have found that the defendant committed a crime of sexual contact or sexual penetration as those terms are specifically defined in the statute. Shall have found. That means something. Sexual contact and sexual penetration are words of legal significance. They mean something. We're in a profession of words, and words matter. This is what we do. What's the point if the words of the statute don't matter? There's no journal entry, no finding that the state could present to a jury or to a judge to say, the judge found this. If this was a DUI fourth offense, and there was a DUI third, alleged DUI third, and the state presented a record to the court to enhance to a DUI fourth, and the record was devoid of any findings of guilt, the court could not enhance. If the record was devoid of any finding beyond a reasonable doubt, the court would not be able to enhance.
Again, what did the court actually say or find?
The court found that this was offensive sexual, it was a sexual offense. Those were the words that it used. And I want to point out, this is, I think, really important. The prosecutor in this case, and I'm quoting from the record here, I don't have the cite for you, but it's in my brief, and I think it's significant. Prosecutor asked the judge in the county court case, not my case, the county court case, judge, I would ask that you would also make an additional finding that, based on those facts, that the defendant did that, the touching did constitute sexual contact. The court, I will make the following findings that, based on the factual narrative discussed, it too is a sexual offense.
Did the court also find that he was subject to SORA?
He made a finding in the record that the defendant should register for SORA. He did make that finding.
Is that a final appealable order?
It could be. The state could appeal that if it wanted to, yes. The state could have appealed any of this.
Does the defendant have appealed it? The
defendant could have appealed it, but he had no incentive to. The court didn't make the proper finding. If the court had found in a DUI case, Your Honor, that the defendant, he might have committed this offense.
So this is a calculated risk made by the defendant at the time of the underlying offense.
I wasn't trial attorney. I have no idea what the thought processes were. But I'm saying the state, if the state wanted to appeal this, the state could have appealed this and could have gotten the district court to say to the county court, no, you have to make specific findings on the record. The county court didn't. The state didn't appeal. And now the state wants to slough that burden off onto the defendants.
Your position here, though, isn't that your client wasn't sure if he was or was not subject to SORA, because the notification was in the record, correct? The signed notification.
It was, correct.
And then he registered upon his release from jail. So you're not saying he wasn't quite sure what he needed to be doing. You're saying that it's somehow relevant to the burden of proof in a violation, a subsequent violation.
I can't recall. I believe all the facts. Your recitation of the facts are slightly off. I believe the record would contain this if you were to dive into it, into the exhibits attached to the record and into arguments surrounding the exhibits. But the bottom line was when the defendant wasn't asked to register or did not register immediately, there was a gap of months. I don't remember if it was 4 months or 9 months, but there was a gap of months. He was picked up on an ancillary charge at the jail, and a sheriff deputy told him that he had to register. And then he signed. My client is low functioning, and it was our position to the trial court in this case that that's why he signed. I think that's in the record, but that's a clarification of what was going on. So I don't think that, and I don't think it matters, frankly, whether or not he knew he had to register. I think what's important is whether or not the state can prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the elements of the requisite statute were met in this case. And they can't, because they can't prove that a court has found sexual contact and sexual penetration. That's what they have to prove.
Are you thinking that under Norman there has to be sort of a play within the play in which there's some evidence on the nature of the underlying crime other than the factual basis?
I disagree with Norman, with the Court of Appeals cite of Norman. I didn't disagree with their end results on that first part of their findings. I disagreed with the latter part of their findings. But I don't think Norman applies. I think this is a straightforward, did they prove beyond a reasonable doubt that there is a record somewhere that says sexual contact or sexual penetration. And it's so easy, Judge. It's so easy for the county court to put a journal entry in that says sexual contact. So easy for the prosecutor at the subsequent SORA violation to place that journal entry in front of the judge. And so easy for the judge to make that finding. That's all I'm asking for. I'm asking that the rule of law be upheld and that the courts be instructed to make specific findings and to honor those specific findings. And I'm saying that the state is not a collateral attack, what the state's doing, but the state's reaching into the record of the county court case to try and justify not proving up or not forcing the county court to do its job.
So that's you think, where the case went off the rails at the county court.
Right. And then from then on, the state can't prove a SORA conviction because the court never made the right finding. Just like if the court never made the right finding at a DUI, it would never be able to enhance that DUI. It's just a broken DUI. They'll have to find another way to get their SORA conviction.
Counsel, the county court conviction required compliance with SORA, correct?
Correct.
So that meant there were three possibilities as to what happened. Either the state proved by clear and convincing evidence sexual contact, either they proved by clear and convincing evidence that there was sexual penetration, or they failed to prove either one of them. Aren't those the three choices? Inherent in the order that was ultimately entered by the county court.
There's a fourth option, that the county court didn't make the proper findings. And we're not allowed to go back into the county court's rationale for making its improper findings. But when a court doesn't do what the statute tells it to do, the state then can't rely on in further proceedings on that failed disposition. And so the fourth option...
Isn't that the question here, whether the state can, or whether you can now collaterally attack what happened back then? Wasn't it the burden of your client to appeal that, the SORA findings at that time?
It wasn't my client's burden. The proper findings were not made. That's not on my client isn't responsible to make the state get its proper findings. If the state didn't believe that the findings were proper, the state should have appealed.
Let me try it a different way.
Okay.
The county court had jurisdiction of the subject matter, correct?
Correct.
The county court had jurisdiction of the person of your client, correct?
Correct.
And the county court entered a judgment subjecting your client to SORA, correct?
Correct.
At that point, what's missing in terms of those are the requirements for a judgment that's not subject to collateral attack?
The county court, the statute is 29.4003 is very clear that it does not say that a finding that someone should register is what makes that offense registerable. It says that the county court has to make specific findings.
Even if the state had not put on any evidence before the county court regarding the sexual nature of the offense, once that judgment became final, wasn't your client bound by it?
My client may have to follow the order of the court, short of being subject to penalties by the court, but he would not be in violation of the statute. So he might be, if he had not registered pursuant to order of the court, he could be held in contempt. But because the statute specifically lays out specific words that are important, that are words of art, that are defined, that you can't enhance, you can't use that county court offense to enhance. I could go and register tomorrow as a sex offender. I'm not going to, but I could. That doesn't mean the fact that I've registered, or even the fact that I've registered in compliance with a faulty county court order, doesn't mean that I'm actually subject to the act.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? 2 minutes and 30 seconds?
Three.
2 minutes and 3 seconds. Mr. Meyer.
Very quickly. I think it's important for this court to look at, you know, the purpose why collateral attacks are not allowed, and you can look to the cases I cite in my brief, the Lawton case, that, you know, judgments, like Justice Castle was saying, judgments have to become final, and only a void judgment can be collaterally attacked. The defendant's argument here is not that this judgment is void. The argument, as I construe it, is that it was erroneous, that the proper finding was not made, and this is just purely a collateral attack. And I think all the state asked this court to look to Norman for is to show that this appeal could have been made. The appeal of the factual findings could have been made back in 2014. The defendant did not make that appeal, and he was subject to SOAR.
In fact, in Norman, what we said is didn't make the findings with the defendant's appeal, but didn't make the findings go and reverse and remanded for findings.
Yes, and then the court made the findings, and it came back again a second time, and the court reviewed those findings under the sufficiency of the evidence standard of review. So simply, the state is asking for this court to look at Norman just to show that the defendant could have made this challenge in 2014. He didn't, and he waived that challenge, and he can't make it here now in this prosecution. But for those reasons, the state would ask to affirm the judgment with the clarification that explained. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next case of the day is...